I must say in all confidence, anybody can pray like that, surely ought to preach tonight. I really felt impressed for Brother Hooven to preach. I know it's been arranged for me to have a part in this, but I didn't think it was for me altogether. And so I truly was delighted in hearing him pray and the few words he said. And I would love to hear him preach tonight. I hope to hear him. I will, I'm sure, before this meeting is over. He's to take part, and he's such a wonderful man of God to me. When the brethren told me that he would be with me, or we would be sharing some in this meeting, I've been happy ever since I heard that. It just made me glad. Made me happy. I like for it to be that way. And he mentioned an expression that was asked, "What think ye of Christ?" I'm sure he's supposed to preach about this. He may yet have to. I don't know. I just maybe introduce it now for him. And then they tell me if you want a musician to play, that can play, if somebody get up and fiddle around that can't play, and then he'll grab the instrument and play it. But that's just about the way it is. And so if I could get up here and just stir his mind up, and he'd say, "Well, brethren, I'll apologize. I will go ahead and try." And he'd get up here and preach, then I'll be happy. But this thought, "What think ye of Christ, whose son is he?" Carries with it many, many thoughts. Of course, I'm sure the thought basically in mind was concerning the Jews and their opinion of Christ. And many had the idea that he was the son of David. They had the idea that he came from a certain lineage and different things. They had many opinions about him. Some were good and some were not very good. What good thing did come out of Nazareth? That he was the most controversial person that ever lived in the world, Jesus Christ was. And the whole history of the world changed around him. And yet how it is that men can even think or have the idea that he was not the Christ is just beyond us, really, because even natural men should be able to recognize that he was a central figure of the entire history of the world that we live in. It's affected mankind throughout all the universe. But there is a thought, "What think ye of Christ?" As we consider the believers, the children of God, what think ye of Christ? A very similar thought was expressed by Christ himself in the 16th chapter of the Gospel of Matthew. When Jesus came into the coast of Caesarea Philippi, he asked his disciples, saying, "Whom do men say that I, the Son of Man, am?" Now here's about "What think ye of Christ? Whose son is he?" This is a very similar expression. "Whom do men say that I, the Son of Man, am?" What are they saying? Now he addressed himself here as the Son of Man, because he was the Son of Man. Not only was he the Son of God, and that we believe and that the Bible declared, and yet he was the Son of God incarnate, that he was God made manifest in the flesh. And he was the Son of Man. Of course, the expression "Son of Man" means more than just the human nature of Christ. It means like the Son of his right hand. It means the Son of Man in the sense of his great omnipotence and his power, the authority. You know, when Benjamin was born, his first name was Ben-Ammiah, meaning the son of sorrow. But it changed his name from Benaniah to Benjamin, which means the son of his right hand. And Christ was this himself. He was a man of sorrow, acquainted with grief. He lived in this world, despised and rejected of men. And he, like Benaniah, son of Saul, but yet like Benjamin, the son of his right hand. So Christ was indeed that. Whom do men say that I, the Son of Man, am? And they said, some say thou art John the Baptist, some Elias. Now these are related because Jesus himself said that if you'll have this concerning John the Baptist, this Elias or Elijah that was to come, which Malachi had told us about right at the closing of the Old Testament, that this event would take place, that he would send Elijah. And that Elijah, behold, I will send you Elijah the prophet before the coming of the great and dreadful day of the Lord. Now, he wasn't speaking about reincarnating the Elijah of the Old Testament, but he was speaking about one coming with the same authority and the power of that Elijah. And Jesus gave us the commentary on that. He said, if you'll have this, this was the Elijah that was to come. And so we don't have to guess about who that Elijah was that was to come. And that was John the Baptist, because he had already prophesied here in the third chapter of Malachi, behold, I will send my messenger, and he shall prepare the way before me, and the Lord whom you seek shall suddenly come to his temple, even the messenger of the covenant whom you delight in. Behold, he shall come, saith the Lord of hosts. And here we have the very prophecy that Jesus spoke about John the Baptist, that he would be like the refiner's fire and the fuller's soap. So was Christ this. And John the Baptist was like a burning and a shining light in the gospel aspect of his coming forth in the world. And so was Christ. On a greater sense, John said, I am not the light, but I come to bear witness of that light. For those born of a woman, there was none greater than John the Baptist. And he brings out the question here concerning, then some are saying, thou art John the Baptist, some Elias. They were sort of tying this together that possibly that Jesus was John the Baptist. John the Baptist had been beheaded, and maybe some were saying, well, John the Baptist is going to be raised from the dead now, and he's going to come and be here among us again. And these ideas and all of these opinions, and some say Elias, that before that coming of the day that the Lord would send Elias, and maybe that's Elijah that was prophesied that he would come. So a lot of these guesses were based on a lot of historical things that they felt like could be a reality. And then others says Jeremiah. Jeremiah was a great prophet of the Old Testament. He prophesied of many things concerning Christ and his coming and his judgments upon the people. So some says Jeremiah's. Or others made a broader guess than this and said one of the prophets. Well, it was an honor to say that you're a prophet of God, even to particularly think about one being John the Baptist or Elijah or Isaiah, or Ezekiel, or some of the great prophets of the Old Testament, to say that this was one of these great men of God that had been possibly raised from the dead and come back here among the people. And these ideas were being advanced, but all that were being said, nothing was admitting that he was the Christ, the Son of the living God. With all the good things that were being said, nobody was coming to the point of the fact that he was the Christ, the Son of the living God. This is what men were saying, men in general. You know, I often think about it today. If you take a census, go around and begin to ask people, what think you of the Primitive Baptists? Do you believe it's the church? I just wonder how many opinions you'd get from just general, I'm talking about religious type people, people that are devout, people that we consider to be good people, people that you recognize as being honorable people, religious type people. If you went around and asked him, what do you think about the Primitive Baptist Church? Do you believe it's the church or not? How many opinions would you get about all of this? So in a sense, Christ was asking, whom do men say that I, the Son of Man, am? And this was the question he asked. And he said unto them, after they had did all of this, spoke of all these different ideas and opinions, and all of these were good. There wasn't anything derogatory or critical here. One of the prophets, all of these were good things, they said. And you know that you take some of the devout Jews that we have today, the people that are godly people among the Jews, they would tell you that Christ was a good man, that no doubt was a prophet. And you know, even Nicodemus said, you know, when Christ came to him, now Nicodemus didn't recognize Christ as the Son of God at the time he was talking to him, but he's called him a rabbi, a master, teacher. We know that no man can do the miracles that thou doest except God be with him. Now he recognized that what he was doing was beyond what humankind could do within his own ability and power. Now some have said that Nicodemus gave no evidence of being born again. Well, I'd question that a little bit. Because Nicodemus really and truly says, no man can do the miracles which thou doest except God be with him. Now there's some recognition of the sovereignty and God, and the recognition that only a man can do a miracle like this with God being with him. He had to be a believer in God. But there's a lot of people who are believers in God. But Jesus says, ye believe in God, believe also in me. And so there needs to be a conversion. There's a lot of difference in being born again and being converted to the truth. Now, I often thought about, somebody said, but when Jesus said to Nicodemus, you must be born again, to me, that didn't necessarily mean, well, you got to be born again, Nicodemus, but it certainly means this, everybody like you or everybody in the condition, regardless of their education or their position or their standard or rule of the Jews or whoever they may be, their position or their genealogy will not get it. You must be born again. Not just you, Nicodemus, but every man that will ever understand this or see this. It's not a thing that comes by generation. It was not something that will come through flesh and blood. It is something that must come by the Spirit of God. It did not mean necessarily that Nicodemus himself was not born again. It just means that Nicodemus and all the rest that understand spiritual things must have the new birth to understand this. Now, Nicodemus didn't understand it. He said, How is it that I speak these natural things to you and you do not understand them? How will you understand spiritual things? So it has to be revealed. And you may think, brethren, every person that doesn't fully understand or comprehend our spiritual things are not born again. But listen, there's a lot of God's folks in this world that you can't make it. I mean, they're already born again, but they don't comprehend it. It has to be revealed to them. It has to be shown to them. Even though they're God's children, they still have to have a revelation of truth and knowledge in these things. But I'm not going to debate. I've heard some good, able men say they didn't feel like Nicodemus was born again. And if they took that position, and long as they say, well, when he was born again, he had to be born of God's Holy Spirit, and he couldn't do anything to get born again by himself, well, I'll still shake his hand. I wouldn't fall out with him about that, because I believe the Lord taught Nicodemus, and as he teaches all, that every man that's born of the Spirit of God must be born by God's sovereign power, and he uses the wind to illustrate that. And so, that is not the debate as far as I'm concerned. The reason I felt like that Nicodemus, you know, later on he came back and defended the right of the law in view of Christ, and not only that, he later begged the body of the Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. I can't much see a man doing all these things, a dead alien sinner and a legalistic Pharisaical Jew, without something in his heart. I remember one time I was talking with a friend of mine that was in the refrigeration business, and a good man. I considered him and still do. He's still living, a very good man. And we had a little grocery business, and he was there trying to sell me some refrigeration equipment. And so I reached in the counter waiting on a customer, and I cut a ham, just a beautiful Hormel ham, right half in two. It was about the prettiest things I've ever seen. It just had a small bone, just a little bit of fat, and just beautiful lean meat. He looked at that ham like that. He was a Jew. Remember this now. He was a Jew. And Isidore Torch was his name. And he says, "You know, that's the prettiest ham I believe I ever seen." I said, "Yes, sir, that's a pretty one, isn't it?" I said, "That's a nice ham." He says, "Cut me off two or three slices of that." I said, "What?" He says, "Well, I know what you're thinking." But he said, "You know where I've got that thing figured? I believe a man's religion ought to be in his heart and not in his stomach." And I said, "Well, you're not too far from the kingdom." In other words, there's a lot of people, my friend, that has got the thing in the heart. And yet later I sat down with that man and talked with him about Christianity and about Christ. He said, "But listen, I can't get away from my rabbi. My rabbi says this, my rabbi says that." And says he's been trained in all of this, and he says the Messiah hadn't come. I said, "But what are you saying in your heart?" He said, "Well, I don't know. I got a big debate in my mind." Don't you see? Here are God's children, my friend, in their heart. They believe in God. And in their heart, they know there's something here. But he didn't fully understand that. And so, Christ began in this great subject here. "Whom do men say that I, the Son of Man, am?" And then he goes on, and then he turns around and says, "But whom say ye that I am?" Now, he talks now to his disciples. What are men saying about me? Now, what do you say about me? And Simon Peter answered and said, and it seemed like Simon was always that outspoken spokesman. He always was one ready to answer. Sometimes he said when he ought not to. He ought to have been quiet a lot of times when he spoke. But here he was saying, he spoke up and said without any hesitation, "Thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God." Now, brethren, I believe in hope. I believe in faith. And I know that there's things that we have not yet seen, we're going to have to hope for. And heaven's one of those things. You're going to have to live in view of hope. But there's some things that is not necessarily, hope would not fit right here. You know, this was a point. And now listen, hope is a great evidence, and it's a wonderful thing, and I love it, and I believe in it, and it's an anchor of our soul, both sure and steadfast, and I certainly do not believe any of us have anything beyond the hope as far as heaven is concerned. Until we arrive, it's going to be hope. It's going to be evidences along the way. But now here, I don't believe we've been proper for this to be. Let me read it, paraphrase it like that. And see how it would fit there. When Simon spoke up, Simon Peter answered, he said, if he'd have said here, "I hope thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God." Now, brother, hope right there would have put a little doubt in some degree there. Now, it just don't fit, does it? Now, you try to fit that in there where he says, "I hope thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God." There would have been doubt in his mind whether or not he was the Christ or the Son of the living God. I'm going to tell you something, brethren. There are some things that God has shown us in this life that we don't have to hope for. It's arrived. Now, there's some things we're going to keep on hoping for, and we do not know, we cannot know. We have to live in faith with only evidence and looking forward to those things because they are not yet seen. But things that are seen are no longer hoped for. What I'm telling you tonight, my friend, if Christ is revealed and he's shown to you, I am the Christ. This is a revelation. When she said here, "Thou art the Christ. Thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God." Jesus answered and said unto him, "Blessed art thou, Simon Bar-Jonah," that is Simon the son of Jonah, "for flesh and blood hath not revealed it unto thee, but my Father which is in heaven." Now, the reason that the Simon Peter could speak up on this occasion and without any question about the matter says, Thou art the Christ. You're the Messiah. You're the promised one. You're the one. You're not just David's son, but you are God's son. Thou art the Christ, the son, not of David, but the son of the living God. What think ye of Christ tonight, brethren? Is any doubt in your mind that he came? Are you doubting? Well, I don't know. There's a lot of good things about it. I know the Bible sounds like it sort of indicates that, but I'm not really sure myself. Is that your case? Not my case. Not my case at all, my friends. There's a lot of things I tell you I have to hope for. I don't even know that I'm a child of God. If I had to just get right down and say that I know proof positive that I am a child of God and I got all the evidence I need and I don't need any more evidence, no, I can't say that. I'm still looking for evidence. I have to search for it and find it because sometimes I'm so all full of confidence about myself because I know my Redeemer liveth. But tomorrow morning I may get up and wonder. I everything may look around him when I would do good, evil is present with me. Are there so many things in my life, poor and afflicted, Lord, up thine among the great unfit to shine? I feel when I would do good, evil is present with me. And all of these things that creates doubt in my own mind, if I'm thine, O Lord, why this cold and lifeless frame? If I'm a child of God, why do I have all this conflict in my life? When I would do good, evil is present with me. I know I have to continue to seek for evidence whether I'm a child of God or not. And another thing I'll have to live in hope of that is because of this. Somebody says, well, I know I'm one. I know my name is written in heaven. I believe mine's written there. I really do. With all the faith and hope I can, I believe my name is written in heaven. I believe that. I have that hope. I have that evidence. But you know, I've never looked in the book. I've never looked in the book. If I know beyond any doubt about it, then without any doubt whatsoever, then what page is it written on? I asked a man one day, he said, I know my name's written in heaven. I said, well, I believe mine's written there too. But he said, I know mine's there. I said, what page is it on? I said, Saul had two names, Saul and Paul. And Sarai and Sarah and Abraham and Jacob and Israel. I said, now which one are your names? How do you know God named you more than once in his book? Your mother might have named you one thing and God's named you something else. I said, what's your name and how is it spelled in the book of life? His mouth dropped open, his eyes got wide. Well, you see, you go beyond what your ability to know. You can't know that. You still have to go by faith and hope in an area of our lives. And we have to keep digging up evidence because we do not know for sure. And that's the reason I love to spend my time within the house of God. I love to hear a brother pray. Because when I can hear a brother pray like the brother prayed tonight, and something tunes into my heart, it gives me a little evidence. Maybe I'm a child of God. Because I wouldn't love to hear a man pray like that if God hadn't done something in my heart. When you sing these old songs, Amazing Grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. I once was lost, but now found, 'twas blind, but now I see. It wouldn't ring a bell to me. There was a time in my life I didn't care a thing on earth about that. All I was interested is coming around the mountain when she comes. But later on, my friend, my interest was in Amazing Grace, how firm a foundation. Yes, saints of the Lord. Yes, sir, a new song. Because I believe God gave me a new heart and a new mind and a new revelation, a new creature. So I need all these things for evidences. I need that. And sometimes I can say, we know we pass from death into life because we love the breath. But sometimes I don't love them as much as I do at other times. Now just be truthful about it. Sometimes, my brethren, you're the sweetest people on earth to me. I'd rather see you than anybody else in the world. But sometimes I'm such a foul condition myself. I'm so low in myself, so far away. You're probably the last fellow I want to see for a little while. Because I just feel like I'm not close enough to the Lord to really be close to you. So these are our experiences. I'm talking about things. But when we speak of Christ himself, when we speak of knowing him, I know whom I believed. You know, these are things that we have knowledge of. I know in whom I have believed. Paul writes that. And so here is the expression. I believe he spoke this as Peter did. When Peter says, Thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God. The reason we can say this with all confidence is because it has been given to us by a revelation not of man, but of God Himself. I told a man one time, I spoke about my experience. I said, The Lord spoke to me. He said, He said, God doesn't speak to men. God doesn't speak to men. He says, God only speaks to you through His written word. That's the only way God has ever spoken to you. He spoke only through His written word. Well, I'm going to tell you, I said, if I know anything about the Lord, He got to me before I got to a Bible. I later got to a Bible, all right, and it was a wonderful book. But I tell you something, spoke to me before the Word spoke to me. He said, there's not but one word. I said, oh, my friend, you better look again. There's a spoken word, and there's a written word, but there's a living word, the Logos. He said, my sheep hear my voice. And I quoted this here to this man because I feel like this teaches what I'm speaking about in the personal call of our Lord in this revelation. He says here, verily, verily, I say unto you, he that entereth not by the door into the sheepfold, but climbeth up some other way, the same as a thief and a robber. But he that entereth in by the door is the shepherd of the sheep. This is the Christ. To him the porter openeth, and the sheep heareth his voice. He calleth his own sheep by name. He leadeth them out. And when he putteth forth his own sheep, he goeth before them, and the sheep follow him, for they know his voice, and a stranger will they not follow, but will flee from him, for they know not the voice of strangers. That man asked me this as well. Now, if Christ has spoken to you, how did he speak to you? What kind of a voice did? Was it Hebrew, a Greek, or was it a bass voice, or a tenor voice, or, you know, really cute? What kind of a voice was it? I said, friend, if you've ever heard it, you'd know it. I don't have to describe it. I said, if you've ever heard the voice of the shepherd, I don't have to describe to you about it. And I couldn't describe it. I could not tell you that. But I believe I know he's spoken to me. I believe I know that with all that's in me, that I have heard his voice. And so here he says, Thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God. I believe, brethren, it is an honor to our God that we come forth not doubting whether he was the Messiah or not. We believe that he came. He did. He was born. He was a virgin. I believe it as much tonight, my friend, if I'd been standing there at the stall when he was born. I believe this with all the power of my soul. If I'd been in the field and heard the other shepherds singing about his praise, or watching the wise men as they traveled the long journey, I feel it with all the power in me that I could see him as he walks to the baptism of John. It's just as much so if I'd been on the scene. How do you feel about it? You know, one man told me one time, he said, listen, if you could convince me that Christ was alive and that he would come here, and somebody that I personally know that had a withered arm, a blind eyes, or a condition like this, and he would absolutely heal these people that I personally know, and I could see him do this, he said, I'd lay this gas pump down. He was working at a station. They ran a grocery business. He said, I'd lay this gas pump down and I'd follow him wherever. I said, in other words, in order to prove to you that he was the Christ, he's got to come back and do these miracles all over to you. But he told doubting Thomas one time, I said, he says, Thomas, because you've seen, you believe, but blessed is the man who hath not seen yet believe. Friend, tonight, I believe tonight that we can recognize the fact that he is the Christ. Thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God. If he was here tonight, brethren, if he was here tonight with us and walked in this building, would we know him as the Christ? Thou art the Christ. Somebody said, well, I'd know him if he had a little halo over his head and had a long white garment on and his hair was way down his back like a hippie and something. I'd know him. I said, well, what would you be recognizing him as? It's some drawing from the imagination of men. That's all you would know. But supposing he came completely opposite of that, because doubtless he was opposite of that in his human nature, because even Judas had to betray him with a kiss. Now, if he'd had a bright shining halo over his head and a long white robe on, glowing in the dark, why would Judas had to went up and kiss the one that was the Christ, see? Why would he have to done that? No, my friend, here it was. This had to be revealed. It had to be revealed. And so I would say that we would say, Thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God. Then he said to Peter, Blessed art thou, Simon Barjona, for flesh and blood hath not revealed it unto thee. This is something that cannot be revealed by the flesh and blood, your own flesh and blood. You can't do it through yourself. There's nothing. The natural man receiveth not the things of the Spirit of God. They're foolishness unto him, and neither indeed can he know them, because they are spiritually discerned. Eye hath not seen, ear hath not heard, neither has it entered into the heart of man the things which God has prepared for them that love him, but they are revealed unto us by his Spirit, for his Spirit searcheth all things, yea, the deep and hidden things of God. For what knoweth a man the things of a man, save the spirit of man that is in him? And knoweth no man the things of God, save by the Spirit of God. That's 1 Corinthians 2, right? Okay, here it shows us very plainly, the natural man receiveth not the things of the Spirit of God. The foolishness unto him. They must be revealed unto him. So you flesh, your own flesh and blood can't do it. You can't reveal it to yourself. You cannot bring Christ to yourself. You cannot make Christ known to yourself. The world says today, if you just repent, sinner, if you just turn around, if you just believe, if you just open your heart, the Lord's knocking on the door. If you just open and let him in, he'd reveal himself unto you. Well, friend, if you could hear him at the door and know he's out there, and you know absolutely it's him, and you know he's outside your heart's door, well, if you believe...